Hi, I'm Donnie Most, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Rocking all week with you.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, so I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room to promote his new album, New York High, please welcome singer, actor, director, and one of the stars of the classic television show Happy Days, Mr. Donnie Most. Hey, Donnie.
Hey, Pat. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Where are you right now? Where are you located?
I'm located near Boulder, Colorado, where I've recently moved. My wife and I moved here three and a half months ago from L.A.
All right. And how's that going? Do you enjoy the winter weather?
Well, as a matter of fact, it was pretty warm up until just a few days ago, and we had our first snow, and it was pretty brisk, but it's kind of fun. And now it's going to warm up in the next few days and go back to some reasonable temperatures, because it had gotten down, like 15 degrees in the middle of the night or something like that, or even lower. But now we're going to be in the 50s and 60s, so that's fine. And I grew up in New York, so I grew up with winters.
Well, you look ready to go for Colorado. You got the turtleneck on, you got the beard going. You look ready for the holidays, I got to be honest.
Yeah, I could even do a Santa thing, huh?
A little bit.
I've been told that before.
So this new album, New York High, this is your first proper album since 2017's D-Most, Mostly Swinging.
Yeah.
How long have you been a fan of swing music?
Well, it's swing, and it's not just swing. It's the Great American Songbook and all those. I lean towards the jazz standards. Although any of the songs from the Great American Songbook could be treated with a jazz bent. So that's the kind of music that I love, which includes swing, big band, but it could also be. It could be ballads, and it could also with some of those incredible songs, and it could be with a smaller band. But yeah, swing. I mean, I do love to swing. I was a big fan of my mom. She was a teenager in the swing era, so she had a lot of those albums. I was introduced to them, and then I discovered the movie The Jolson Story when I was nine. And that had a huge impact on me. And I loved Jolson's, his talent, his voice, and those songs. And then I started getting a lot of albums and listening to the radio and hearing some DJs playing that kind of, the Ella Fitzgeralds and Count Basie and Frank Sinatra and Sarah Vaughan and Dino and Tony Bennett, all of those singers. And I got a real education, and I actually was singing. I went to a school for singing when I was 13, and then I got picked, and I got to be performing in nightclubs in the Catskill Mountains one summer, and I was just turning 15, and I was singing in these nightclubs. So I mean, it goes way back, and it's been in my blood for a while.
That's a funny story to me, because as a 15-year-old, you're performing in these Catskill nightclubs. And as a 21-year-old, you get cast as a teenager on Happy Days. So,
yeah, I know that. I was actually 20, but that no 20, big deal.
Okay, 20.
Right.
Let me tell people right now just where they can find you on social media. Get it out of the way. Your website is donniemost.com. Twitter, you're at @most_Don, and on Instagram @DonMost1, the number one.
It's actually Instagram is Don Most One. Yeah, and Twitter is at Most _ Don.
Yes.
Facebook is Don, and Facebook is Don Most.
Excellent, excellent. Now,
right.
I listened to New York High again this morning, top to bottom. It's available on all digital platforms. This album is a whole lot of fun. It just puts a smile on your face, and it just
Thank you.
It just moves along, and I really enjoyed it. And look, people who listen to this show know that swing isn't my number one thing, but
right.
I really did enjoy this album. So bravo, Mr. Most.
Oh, I appreciate that, Pat. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think it's a really nice blend of material and the arrangements with great musicians. And the producer, Tony Mantor, did a fabulous job of kind of putting it all together in an organic way. And it felt really organic. And the album I did that you mentioned before, Mostly Swinging, which I love, it was a little different. It was big band and all charted, a wonderful arranger and producer named Willie Murillo, all charted. So that, you know, because 18 pieces, it's kind of hard to have people improvising. So, except during solos, of course, but it was all written out. And then these guys were incredible musicians and played the hell out of it. And it was great. That was one way.
The sky was blue and high above. The moon was new, and so was love. This eager heart of mine was singing, lover, where can you be? You came at last, love had its day. That day is past, you've gone away. This aching heart of mine was singing, lover, come back to me. When I remember every little thing you used to do,
Tony's method is different. We only did this with more like a 4 or 5 piece band with some extra pieces for solos, and it was arranged, but sort of a roadmap for these musicians, which would allow them to put in their own variations and things that they hear. So you bring their talent, and you don't quite know where it's going to go. And I mean they know to a good degree, but it's more, you know, it's a little more spontaneous. And then I would sing with it and get feelings from them, and then do the real vocals later, and then overdubs later for other musicians. But it really just kind of kept evolving, and I really loved the process. So thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the album. Really happy.
And how long does it take to from start to finish for New York High to get done?
Well, that was a tough road because it was kind of during part of it during the pandemic. So we were like, we'd do 3 or 4 songs, like fly into Nashville where Tony's based, and then we were planning to do the next one not too far down the road, but then that got delayed. We kept having delays. So it was over the course of probably a year and a half, but it could have been done in, you know, I'd say we could have done that if it wasn't for the pandemic, probably in, you know, because I wasn't living in Nashville, so it's hard to say, but, you know, 2-3 months, we probably could have done it, I think. And with some of the post stuff that Tony did, another month or two, something like that.
Is the singing your passion now? If you had to choose one to continue on until your days are done, would it be acting or would it be singing?
People ask me that, and it kills me. I can't. It's so hard. It kills me because I love them both. I really do, and I've been able over the last few years to do both. I got very busy in the last 4 years working on some films, doing more films than I'd done in like the 15 years previous. It was like, I guess because I'm getting finally old enough that, you know, I'm past being looked upon as Ralph or something, but it's opened up and I've been playing roles, everything from a local pastor to a polygamist. I literally did. I went from playing a pastor to a polygamist and everything in between, a king, the owner of a hockey team, a career criminal, a Western. And I just played the head of during the 20s, a true story in Detroit area, prohibition, bootlegging, gangs vying for control. I played, based on real characters, the head of a Jewish mob. And it was like really intense. So, I mean, I'm getting to play so many different roles, and that's what I've always wanted to do. So for me to say, oh, you know, singing or and singing like we talked about is my first love, so to speak. So I can't choose. I can't.
I bet these acting parts are coming now because you're, again, mature, but you're a silver fox now. The red hair is gone. So you really have to look and go like, hey, that's that guy from Happy Days, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, getting older and maturing and losing the red, although I lost that a little while ago. But it's just that I finally think at an age where these parts are opening up and there's enough distance and time from Happy Days. So all of that is, all of those are factors. And then, you know, also by pecking away at it, because when I first left the show, it was hard to get away from that. But, you know, I just kept pecking and I'd get a role that was a little bit different, you know, and then something like a psychiatrist. So that was a little different, or the father of, you know, somebody. And then I did a Star Trek Voyager, which was completely different. You know, I played a doctor, a villain. And I think people started saying, oh, you know, he's not that guy.
Yeah.
He's an actor. He's actually an actor, you know, who was playing a guy. So it was tough, but it gradually, you know, the door, I kept pushing, pecking away and opening it up a little more. And now it's, I hope it continues. And, you know, I feel like it's just the beginning of a whole new phase, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love the word phase. I love a new phase. That's terrific. When you were you played Ralph Mouw for, you know, a decade pretty much.
Seven seasons. Because I didn't stay for the entire run of the show.
Right. When you're in that though, I mean, you were young at the time, you know, not even in, you know, in your 20s. Does it ever cross your mind like this could be it? Or do you just at that age, or do you think after this, it's just, there's going to be many, many more opportunities, because when you play an iconic role, I mean, like Fred Gwynne as Herman Munster, I mean, sometimes it's hard to get out of it big time.
Absolutely. That's what I was alluding to just a minute ago.
It was hard.
I left the show after the seventh season. The show ran 11 years.
Yeah.
But I was feeling like, I've been playing this one character for 7 years, and I knew, and back then there was only three networks. There wasn't, you know, so much content.
Yeah. Exactly.
So people, it's limited. So you're known much more so than today. People, you know, have so many choices. So I knew that it was going to be hard, and I felt like it was time to move on. I played the, like I said, the guy for so long, and I felt that the show had kind of peaked. I didn't think, you know, it was continuing to grow after 7 years. And so it was a tough decision because I loved everybody that I worked with. It was a great, great family, the cast and people behind it. But then I said to my agent, I only want to do film and theater. I didn't even want to do another series. I wanted to, you know, break into films and do serious theater and all of that. But I couldn't even get an audition for a movie for 6 months. I finally got like one audition, you know, and they wouldn't even read me because so it was hard.
Yeah.
Definitely. But like I said, perseverance is a key thing you have to have, and belief. But your question was a good one, that did I think, oh, you know, with this kind of iconic show, is this going to be it? You know, I was young enough to have the determination and belief and ambition, you know, to be still be positive, to stay positive somehow, even when, because it was, you know, it was up, up, up. And then all of a sudden you do, you know, you dip down and you're not getting the calls, you're not getting the auditions. But then what I did was I stayed busy. I would do theater, you know, in different parts of the country just to keep the muscle going and just keep moving forward in some way. And then, like I said, I get an opportunity here, and then it would change and starts changing people's perceptions little by little. But then It starts to build and hopefully hit a critical mass and break wide open.
Now, you mentioned that back then there were only three networks. So people that are younger that don't know about the three networks, because now we have Hulu and Apple TV and Netflix, and there's so much content and so many things out there. The difficulty in scoring a part back then on a television show on one of the three major networks, and then that show becoming popular. I mean, it's slim to none, and yet you did it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well,
it would be much more it was much more difficult back then.
I guess so. You know, some people say, well, but there's even more competition now, but there's so many more shows. So it might have been more difficult then. I don't know. But, you know, I was, it didn't just, you know, happen like, oh, I happened to meet somebody and then they introduced me. You know, you have to be going after it with laser focus.
Yeah.
And that's, like I said, I started when I was 13, I would take the subway from Brooklyn into Manhattan every Saturday to go to this school for singing, dancing, acting. And, you know, I was just, that's what I was focused on. And then after that summer where I was singing, I switched a focus to acting in a serious way. And I went to a different school, a workshop, and really focused on the acting and was able to meet a manager and then go on auditions and constantly going on auditions. And, you know, so you know, the old saying, you know, earning your dues. I was going after it for 7 years solid, you know. Well, I was in college during three of those years, but I would take a bus from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where I went to Lehigh University. I would get a call, oh, I have an audition for a commercial or something like that. I'd get on we couldn't have cars our freshman year, so you walk to the bus station in town, take a almost 3-hour bus ride into Manhattan, then get on subway and go to an audition. It takes 5 minutes and then go back. You know, I mean, this is how crazy I was when I think back what I was doing. But that's what you have to. And so then is there some luck? Yeah. But you have to create it. You have to create it too. Yeah. You have to.
It's not going to come to you.
Yeah.
You got to get out there. Let's get back to New York High, since that's what we're here to promote. And again, folks, it's on all digital platforms. Go listen, go purchase. You will enjoy this album. Like I said, it will put a smile on your face.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I don't have album credits in front of me. Are any of these songs originals that were written specifically for the album?
Not specifically for the album. All of them were 80% of jazz standards.
Yeah.
There's two that are from the classic rock era, Smokey Robinson song.
did you wrong. My heart went out to play, but in the game I lost you. What a price to pay. I'm crying. I know I've made a few, but I'm only human.
And the one that Sanford Townsend Band did, I wanted to bring in a little bit of that because I loved that music too, you know, as a teenager and being in college. But so I added those. But then there was one original song called New York High, which is the name of the album as well. That I was introduced to somebody. Well, my friend introduced me to these songs written by Mike Reed, who's a Brit. He's from England, and he wrote this with his partner, this great song about New York that was kind of like another anthem for New York, like New York, New York, that Sinatra made famous.
Right.
But a newer generation's version, and it had that swing feel that I loved, and the lyrics were great. And as a matter of fact, we released it. Tony decided to release the single in the UK before, not officially release it here yet, even though the album's out, it wasn't released. And it's on this chart called the Heritage Chart over there. It reaches a lot of countries. And I've moved up to number 18 on the chart. The other day.
That's exciting.
So, yeah, I'm very excited about it. And we did a little video. I wish I should have sent you or somebody should have sent you the video. It came out really fun. The video of New York High. So people, they could go, if you go look up Heritage Chart, you'll find the site and you can vote. You can vote once a week. And maybe you'd be able to see the video. I don't know. YouTube, you could see the video. I know it's on there, called New York High, the same song. And check it out. It's really fun.
All right, Rock Solid listeners, go find the Heritage Chart and vote for New York High by Donnie Most. Now, you brought up the Sanford Townsend Band song, Smoke from a Distant Fire. I loved your take on this. Whose idea was it to sing this and arrange it in this manner?
Paradise, you pulled the rug right out from under my life. I know where you're going to. I knew when you came home last night, 'cause your eyes had a mist from the smoke of a distant fire. Stung, should have seen it come a long time ago. When I realized
Tony Mantor, the producer, suggested it to me because I always loved that song, and it also I guess I picked it because it's rock kind of combined with a little bit of a swing jazz feel.
Yeah.
Smoke from a Distant Fire. So. And I loved the track, and I said, I posited it to him. He said, you know, I once heard some band do this, you know, where they really slowed it down and kind of bluesy. And I said, oh, wow, that'd be interesting. So, you know, we talked about it. I think he found a demo or something of this approach to it. And I said, yeah, I really like that. And I don't want to try to do it the way Sanford Townsend did it. It's better to do it different. You know, let's do it that way. So we did. And it really, it works. I don't know which I like better because I love their version so much, but this works. It's nice.
Now, Donnie, I have to talk about this. Your first album actually came out in 1976.
Right.
Now, how did that, I'm always fascinated by that back in the day when someone that I watched as an actor all of a sudden had an album. How did that come? Was that just dropped into your lap? Hey, you're on Happy Days. Would you like to do an album? Was it like that?
Almost like that. I was doing an interview for some magazine. It was about probably season 4 or something like that. So we were already pretty big.
Yeah.
And because we didn't hit number one until the third season. So it was somewhere after that shortly. And it was an interview. And then the gentleman who was interviewing me said, because I was talking about how I was singing before I was acting.
Yeah.
Somehow it came up. So he said, I'm kind of partners with this guy who's a record producer, and I'd like to introduce you to him because since you sing and da, 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 that whole thing. So I met the producer and we got along really well. And he was able to, based on the popularity of the show and all that, get me a deal at a big label, United Artists. The only issue was they weren't going to let me sing the kind of music that I really, would want to sing.
Right.
The
right.
standard. Because in the 70s, late 70s, it was looked upon as like your parents' music or grandparents' music. It came back into fashion, into favor, kind of in the late 80s, 90s, it started coming back. But back then, it wasn't. So he said, we're going to have to do more rock, pop kind of material. And I said, all right, well, it'd be great for me to get in the studio and learn, experience that. And
I liked, like I said,
I also, when I was in high school and into college, I started really loving that during that time. It was a renaissance of music in the late 60s and early 70s. So I loved listening to a lot of there were so many hybrid mixtures of styles, rock with blues, rock with folk, rock with jazz, rock with, anything you can name, almost country. So it was very fervent time. So I loved that music too. But this was, it was a little more poppy than pop kind of feel than I would have wanted to do, but it was still a good experience, It reached one of the songs reached the top 40 on the big charts at the time, so it was worthwhile. But it's not, you listen to what I'm doing these last two albums. It's night and day.
It's not indicative of what you like to do in 2023. And as far as the resurgence of this type of music, for me, I would have to say maybe Harry Connick Jr. is the guy that really brought it all back.
I often cite that as well, that I guess it was Harry Met Sally with It Had to Be You, he's been. And then also right after that, well, with Tony Bennett doing some of the acoustic stuff and getting popular in MTV a little bit, then Natalie Cole, I think when she did that album dedicated to her dad, And then Diana Krall came on the scene, and I love Diana Krall. I've seen her concert. And then it started, that's when it really, those artists that we just talked about.
Yeah, those are and the then ones.
People like Rod Stewart started doing standards, and then many others. And today there's Bublé, you know, he was doing that a lot. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, it hit me, I don't know, about 10 years ago, because I always knew I wanted to do something with them, with this music again, because I'd put it aside, you know, when I switched into my gear into acting. But it wasn't until like 10 years ago, and it hit me. I said, well, if I'm ever going to do it, this is the time,
right?
Because the music is, there'll be more receptivity towards this than it was in the 70s when I had some juice from Happy Days, but they wouldn't want me to do that. So I went out and put a show, an act together, you know, a nightclub kind of thing, and started doing some jazz clubs in LA and New York, and then it kept growing. So thank goodness it came back, and I think it's, you know, I see young people at some of my shows and where they really enjoy the music. You know, I think when they're exposed to it properly, because, you know, I'm not doing bebop, you know, I'm not doing the kind of jazz that is a little, you know, if it takes like a little education to get used to some of that kind of jazz.
Right.
You know, I'm doing more straight ahead jazz and blues and swing, and it's a little more accessible.
Yeah.
You know?
I was just going to say, you're making it accessible to the masses for sure.
Yeah. That's what, you know, I was a huge Bobby Darin fan, and I saw Bobby at the Copacabana when I was 18, and Bobby could swing like as good as any of them, better. Bobby, I mean, he was freaking amazing. And, you know, so he made that kind of music, I think, accessible. If you look back at his catalog and all the stuff he did, he could do blues and jazz and R&B and any style of music. But
I think he did country albums too. He had a few country albums in there.
Yeah, he would do country, folk. He did an album of Ray Charles, you know, all Ray Charles. Anyway, so I don't know. I'm you know, real careful about what songs I do and the arrangements, you know. Yeah. It's really key. And I think I can make it accessible to a wider range of people than might say, well, jazz, but you know, jazz is a wide area, and there's all different subsets of jazz. And so anyway, this is the music that I'm putting out there, and we'll see where it goes.
Now, one of the songs I really enjoyed on the album is You'd Be Nice to Come Home To.
Yeah.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire, while the breeze on high sang a lullaby. You'd be all that I could desire under stars chilled by the winter, under an August moon burning above. You'd be so nice. You'd be paradise to come home to.
Who's that person for you? Who's the person that's nice to come home to?
Oh, who's that person for me? Well, my wife.
And how long have you been married?
42 years.
Yeah. This is basically, I'm leading you there. That is incredible. 42 years. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. I thank God that we met during a episode of Happy Days. My wife Morgan was an actress and did a guest, wound up doing two episodes. And that's how it all started, you know. And yeah, it's hard to believe when I think about that it's been that long. And now we just became grandparents for the first time. So
another congratulations then.
Another part of the new phase. Yeah, that's the reason we're in Colorado, because we wanted to be closer to our daughter, grandchild. Yeah.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, a few more questions about Happy Days. I don't want to keep you too much longer. Marion Ross just turned 95 last week.
Yes. I need to call her.
I have seen her. I live in Woodland Hills, California. I've seen her many times shopping at the Target.
Yeah. And,
it's exciting for me. I've never gone up and said hello. I'm sure she'd be fine with it because I've seen others do it. But I really got to get a kick out of it when I see her out and about.
Marion's incredible.
Unbelievable.
Just amazing.
I do want to say that as a kid, Ralph Mouth was my favorite.
Because
I knew everyone loved the Fonz, but I'm not cool. I'm not going to be the Fonz, but I was funny. So you're the person that I gravitated to, you know, when I would watch the show. You were my guy.
That's great. And the funny thing is, when I was in high school, I was not anything like that. You know, I was never the guy telling jokes, or I was always the audience for, you know, I knew some of my other friends would like to crack jokes and get the laughs and stuff. I knew some people, you know, that were like that. And I was like, you know, I was more probably like Richie, because I was an honor student. Uh-huh. I was pretty kind of shy, you know. I was on the swimming team and, you know, and didn't mess up, you know. I was pretty straight arrow. And, but I, you know, that's what, to me, the joy of acting was playing somebody different than myself.
Right,
I'd almost rather play somebody very different than myself.
I assume Ron Howard was cast before you were.
Yes.
So was there any talk about you changing your hair color so that they wouldn't have two redheads?
Well, interestingly enough, what happened was Ron and Anson did a pilot of Happy Days a year and a half earlier than the one that got on the air, because they did it and it didn't sell. But then Grease gets on Broadway and becomes a hit show about the 50s. American Graffiti comes out. This is like a year and a half later.
Yeah.
And the network executives at ABC are like, oh, wait a minute. Didn't we have a show? Gary Marshall was behind the first one too. And they said to Gary, you know, we want to do another pilot. But that one was a little too soft. They said, let's make it a little more graffiti-ish and that kind of thing. And they told Gary that he'd have to, that Ron and Anson, they might be too old now to play high school. And Gary saying, no, they're not. So he had to screen test them. He had to screen test Ron and Anson, even though they had done the show a year and a half earlier. And against, you know, six or seven, four other pairings of Ralph, of Richie and Potsies, and me being one of them. So I was auditioning for Potsy.
Oh, okay.
There was no, you know, there was no, in the first pilot, there was no Fonzie, there was no Ralph. So I was auditioning, you know, went through several auditions and then screen test. And then they told me, you know, a few days later, my agent said, and the red hair might've had something to do with it, but they said, no, they're going with Ron again, Ron and Anson. Network said, yeah, you're right. They could do this. They still looked the age, but they told Gary they wanted me in the show because they liked my screen test so much.
Nice.
So then they said, well, there's a small part in the pilot a guy named Ralph, because, and the, somebody said, you know, they didn't want two redheads, you know, playing against the two main characters.
Yeah.
I guess they thought it was okay that if I was a, you know, I was more of a supporting, because in the beginning I was just a guy who'd come in, usually a scene in the beginning, scene near the end, make some jokes, you know, and, oh, well, so what happened, Richie, with the so-and-so? And then I crack a joke about, you know, so I wasn't really front and center. But then it was okay, I guess. Eventually they accepted that there were two redheads, you know. And then Marion's a redhead.
Yeah. So I saw you recently, just a few days ago on social media, promoting Henry Winkler's upcoming book.
Yeah.
We know Henry Winkler now because we've seen him in other things, and I've seen him on interviews and everything. And he is not the Fonz.
No.
That's probably the biggest character stretch on the show. I'm talking as a layman. What was it like to be hanging out with Henry on set and then action is called and to see him flip the switch and become the Fonz? What was that like to see this?
It was a wonder. I was so taken. I remember I would watch, you know, we were doing the show in the beginning, not with an audience. It was shot like a movie.
Yeah.
So if I was done for the day, you know, a lot of times people would go home, they're done, but I would stick around. I wanted to watch Tom Bosley and Ron Howard, you know, the people. And then I meet this guy, Henry. And when I first met him, he was like, almost he was in character a little bit, like he didn't want to break character while they were shooting. But then I'd get to know him and see that he was nothing like, you know, the Fonz, like you said, it's just nothing like him. And then just to watch him, like you said, you know, transform himself and this other guy appears. It was fascinating. It was something to behold. I was very excited and grateful that I was able to be witness, you know, and not just Henry, you know, the rest of the cast too was great. Yeah. The rest of the cast was great. And I used to love to watch all of them, but yes, the one that was most striking and different was Henry as the Fonz for sure.
And then for your first major gig to work with Gary Marshall and Jerry Paris, I mean,
yeah,
just two guys of that caliber back in the day. I mean, what a great working experience it must have been for you.
Fantastic. Just Jerry, Jerry and I became, he was like a mentor to me, and we became really close, and he was my best man at my wedding. And I had watched the Dick Van Dyke Show, you know, all the time. His name. I knew he was the next door neighbor, but also that he was the director of most of those episodes. And then I was aware of his, he had a acting career, you know, he was in Marty, the Academy Awards film for Ernest Borgnine, Caine Mutiny. And he was in the film, The Wild Ones with Marlon Brando. So, you know, I was really excited to work with Jerry, and I'd seen Gary's name on the Dick Van Dyke Show too. And by then I think he had The Odd Couple, which his show was on the air. Yeah. So yeah. And to watch, you know, to be in their presence and watch, they were both comedic geniuses. And it was unbelievable. You know, I feel I knew how lucky I was to be able to be with these actors, this, you know, great bringing together of personalities and talent in that cast. And then Jerry and Gary. And then we had some other great writers, producers. It was a dream come true, you know, a total dream.
Yeah. I mean, it's like being in school. You were still learning at that point.
Yeah.
Working. So that's an incredible situation to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. 150%. Yeah.
All right. We're nearing the holiday. So I want to give a shout out to your 2016 Christmas EP, Swinging Down the Chimney Tonight. I really got a kick out of the song, The Man with the Bag.
Mr. Kringle is soon gonna jingle the bells that'll tinkle all your troubles away. Everybody's waiting for the man with a bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He's got a sleigh full, it's not gonna stay full. He's got stuff to drop at every stop of the way. Everybody's waiting for the man with a bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He'll be to the prayers that you've made through the year. You'll get yours if you've done everything you should. Extra special good, he'll make this December the one you'll remember, the best and the merriest you ever did have.
I had never heard that Christmas song, and that's a cool one. I like that a lot.
It is cool. I, you know, when we were picking out with this, Willie Murillo produced that one with me, and well, he produced it, and I can't remember, we were looking at songs and trying to figure it out, and I think he might have suggested that one, and I wasn't that familiar with it either.
And then when
I heard it, it was like, oh, this is great, this is a really cool song, Man with the Bag. And I think I might have even heard a version of Louis Armstrong doing it, but I listened to a bunch of versions, and they were all great, but I think maybe Louis Armstrong, and that was really fun. Anyway, it turned out cool. It is cool.
Put that on your Christmas playlist. Donnie, I want to just tell you, I got to quote Ralph Mouth when I say, after all these years, you still got it.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you so much for doing this today. Continued success with New York High. And everyone just go to DonnieMost.com and you'll find out everything you need to know, where to find Donnie when he's going to do shows and all that stuff. So
it was DonnieMost.com, and now it's real DonnieMost.com.
Oh my goodness. Well, Google your name. It'll come up. Yeah. People will find it.
Yeah. And I need to update it.
The last thing I ask of all my guests is I always do a playout song, and it should be one from New York High. So which one would you like me to close out with?
Oh, wow. From New York High. Well, geez, that's such a tough one. They're like, you know, all my children.
Sure.
I would maybe New York High, because it's the name of the album. Because one that's really a little different. How did you feel about there's a song that we did that was, it's not really swing, it's Jump Blues, which is a cousin to swing. And there's that song, I Love the Way My Baby Sings the Blues. I don't know if you heard it, but it's kind of, you know, has that same feel of swing a little bit, but so that one I like a lot, but New York High probably, because that's the one that's, you know, being pushed.
It's the title track.
Yeah. And I made it, the album made it to the Grammy ballot. So I'm waiting to see, we'll find out in about 10 days. You know, the next step is it gets rounded down to the five nominees. It's on the Grammy ballot for album of the year in the category of traditional pop, they called it.
That's exciting. So, I mean, how exciting is that? I mean, incredible.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I mean, it's still a bit of a long shot, I'm sure, to get to those final five, but you know, stranger things have happened.
Everything's a long shot in entertainment, Donnie.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. Very wise words there.
All right, everybody, go to rocksolidpodcast.com for all things about the show. Follow us on Twitter at @RockSolidShow and on Instagram at @RockSolidShow. A pleasure to speak with Donnie Most. I grew up with you, seeing your face. So to see you today, it's a thrill. And everybody out there, please enjoy the song, New York High. Thank you, Donnie.
Thank you, Pat. Really appreciate it.
New York is getting me high. Girls by the store club have been catching my eye. Moonbeams dance on a Waldorf hotel. Could it be I've fallen?
downtown Manhattan's like a shower of stars, shining reflections of those New York bars. George M. Cohen, another Times Square sky. Could it be I'm dancing on a new